Jung's Four Steps to Transformation. During the course of this lecture, I'm going to introduce the concept to you and take you very briefly through the four stages of transformation as outlined by Jung, and then the analog that he uses or that inspired his four steps, which are the four steps of alchemy or chemical transmutation. And please don't be concerned about these rather opaque terms. They sound a lot more complex than they are. I'll take you through them and hopefully make them very clear for you. And then I'm going to share a story where we see the transformation process happening. And I'm going to take a story from popular culture, specifically from a television series by the name of True Detective. Many of you may have seen it, but if you haven't seen it, I would highly recommend it. And I'm going to briefly show you how the transformation process is acted out in the narrative of the story. So without further ado, I think it is probably better, in this case, to start off with the alchemical process that inspired Jung's four steps and to say something briefly about them. For Jung, for individuation, the seeds of that possibility and of that process lie within us. And that reality was the focus of Gnostic alchemy. But let me take a step back and just say something about the alchemical process as it originally existed and as it was practiced as a very early form of chemistry, if you will. The idea really was the transmutation of base metals into valuable finer metals. Specifically, the focus was the transmutation of base metal, such as lead, into something such as gold. The idea was that through an alchemical process, through a pattern of continually refining the base metal in the alchemical furnace, or ethanol, and by putting it under pressure, as it were, that it could be refined and its essence, which was seen as a pure or higher metal such as gold, would emerge. And this was known as the Philosopher's Stone. Gnostic alchemy was the application of this chemical, mechanical, material alchemical process to the unfolding of the alchemist himself, of his own spiritual process, and of his own process of coming to know himself and coming to know the divine. Jung saw in alchemy an analog for his individuation process, and he was very impressed by the fact that alchemy constituted a subterranean parallel to the explicit exoteric Christian process. It was the Gnostic parallel or analog to the exoteric Christian process of transformation. The alchemical process is typically described in three or four steps. In this particular case, I'm going to focus on four steps so that it maps better onto Jung's four steps of transformation. And the four steps that the alchemical process of transmutation involve are the negredo, the black, the albedo, white, the citrinus, the yellow or green, and the rubedo, the red. And I'll say something about each of those processes. Remember that the process then was a transmutation of a base metal into a refined or higher metal, which of course is a very good analog for the individuation process, or for any process of transformation. And the idea beginning with the negredo was the idea that it started with a base metal, with a common stone, as it were, something that was typically cast aside, that was seen as not having any value. And this was known as the prima materia, the original substance. And in psychological terms, of course, this is the problem, as it were. This is the neurosis or the wound or the pathology as it initially presents itself. And this was, metaphorically speaking, the process of the dark night of the soul. Following negredo, we have the albedo, which is the whitening or the very first stage of consciousness. This is the waking up from the sleep of consciousness or the sleep of the soul. From there follows the citrinitas, which is the yellowing or the rising of the sun. And the rising sun is a symbol of mystical experience and contains the aspects of revelation. It can be in many forms, but it is experienced often as a vision, big dream, or an intuition or truth. So in psychoanalytic terms, this is the process of illumination and of education, or recognizing the truth that is contained in the constellating situation or in the wound. And then finally the rubedo, which is the fruit that becomes ripe now. It is the reddening or ripening, and it is the coming to fruition of the work that is done in the negredo, the albedo, and the citrinitas. This is now the transformative process wherein the gold or philosopher's stone is produced. These four processes then, the negredo, the dark night of the soul, the albedo, the whitening or coming to consciousness, the citrinitas, which is the refinement of the previously coarse material by truth or intuition or some sort of vision. There is some type of awakening and the illusory aspect of the original constellating content is recognized, and then finally, the transformative process or the ripening of the rubedo as the fruit of your labors, or of the labors of the Gnostic alchemist, but hopefully in this case that will be you. Before I unpack the four stages of transformation that we have from Jung, let me read you a quote in his own words. And he says, so this is from Collected Works, Volume 16, he says, "Analytical psychology, as defined as embracing both psychoanalysis and individual psychology, this approach includes four stages: confession, elucidation, education, and transformation. Each of these stages is subsequently analyzed. In the first stage, the secrets or inhibited emotions, analogous to repressed sins that lead to neurosis, must be confessed to enable the patient to regain his wholeness and his dependence on the doctor. Transference must be severed. Next, the elucidation of this transference must take place and the patient's fixation analyzed. The importance of drawing the patient out of himself in the process of education in order to attain normal adaptation is stressed. The fourth stage, transformation, is seen to affect both the patient and the doctor, whose personalities have interacted throughout the treatment. Emphasis is placed on the doctor's need to engage in self-education, to understand that both he and the patient are in search of the cure that involves not just the body, but the entire psyche." End of quote. So Jung then gives us these four stages, which, as I said, are analogous to, and I think inspired by, the four stages of Gnostic alchemy. The four stages that he gives us are confession, or catharsis, elucidation, or sometimes known as amplification, education, and ultimately transformation. Just to repeat the analog again, in the alchemical process we have the nigredo, the albedo, the citrinitas, and the rubedo. And in Jung's four stages of transformation, we have the confession, or catharsis, the elucidation, the education, and the transformation. Let me say something briefly about all of these four steps. The confession is very much in line with the way it sounds. It is really the process of speaking, of confessing, of coming to terms with, of admitting, of facing, as it were, whatever the content is. So, of course, the image, the classical image that we have in our collective psyche of this is the confession in Catholicism, the confession that happens, the sacrament of the confession in the Catholic Church, is when a member of the congregation, one of the believers, confesses his or her sins in the confessional to the priest. And that image is very illuminating of what we mean by when we talk about the first stage of the transformation process as being confession. In psychoanalysis, this is typically the confession of the patient or the analysand to their master confessor, who in that case is of course the psychoanalyst. This is the process of not repressing, but of admitting and of facing one's sin, so to speak. Sin, in psychoanalytic terms, can be understood as neurosis or as a wound. In many cases, it is the content that is causing the distress and that one needs to come to terms with. So that is the first process, the confession. From there, the process of elucidation or amplification is the process of putting flesh on those bones, as it were. So it's looking at the context of the content. What is the context that this issue rises out of? What are the associations that you have with this issue? What is it that you imagine is held in this? What does it mean? Where is it going? So it's the process of recruiting the feeling and imaginative aspects of the psyche, to elaborate on and to illustrate and to describe in as much detail as possible what the essence is, what the meaning and what the phenomenal body, as it were, of the confessed content is. But the significance of this process can hardly be overstated. This is something that many of you may be familiar with. It is the process whereby dream interpretation proceeds. So one has the original dream content, the bare bones of the dream, of the narrative. And the process of engaging with their dream content, or that fantasy material always starts off with this process of elucidation or amplification. What are the associations? What comes up for you? What is the meaning? What are the feelings, thoughts, imaginations, and fantasy associated with the content? From there, we go into the process of education, and education in the psychoanalytic sense. This is to some degree the intervention of the psychoanalyst who acts as the voice of the reality principle to perhaps educate and to help the analysand recognize certain elements of the content that are maybe principally based in fantasy and are not in accord with reality. It is the process of education. It is a process of understanding what the phenomenon looks like at the objective rather than a purely subjective level. In terms of engaging in this process on one's own, which is what certainly the case is for most of you on this program, I would think, or at least those that are not working on a regular basis with some sort of psychoanalyst or counselor, it is a process of starting to recruit the ego and then the rational function and to critically evaluate the content that is being produced. You see, in the psychoanalytic setting, the psychoanalyst stands in for the ego. When one is engaging in this process on your own, it is your ego and your critical thinking function that needs to be recruited to constellate the reality principle and bring about a process of self-education. Through these three processes, the fourth process emerges, which is the process of transformation. So the process of transformation is, as it were, an emergent property that emerges spontaneously out of the other three processes when they are sincerely engaged with. But the process of transformation, inasmuch as it is an active process, is a process of then reimagining oneself and reimagining what was originally presented in a transformed and rehabilitated light. So that very briefly then are the four steps of the transformative process in the Jungian psychoanalysis: confession, elucidation, education, and ultimately transformation. These are unpacked both in the concept document and also in some detail in the application that you would have received along with this month's module pack. Also, during the course of this month, we are going to focus on each of these steps, one at a time, during the course of the 4 weeks of this module. I do, however, want to say something more about this, and I thought that it would be useful to share a story with you that is a story of transformation. And although it may not map perfectly onto the four stages, I do think that it maps onto them pretty well, and it is a useful story to take it out of the abstract and allow me to give you an example of what we are talking about when we talk about the transformative process. The story that I want to share with you as an example of this process is, as I mentioned, from the TV series True Detective that aired in 2014, that is created and written by author Nick Pizzolatto. It's the first season specifically of the series that I'm going to be talking about, and it follows a pair of Louisiana State Police detectives, Rust and Cole, played by Matthew McConaughey, known as Rust, and Martin Hart, known as Marty, played by Woody Harrelson, and their pursuit of a serial killer over the course of 17 years, from 1995 to 2012. Just to give you the context of the story, in 2012, two homicide investigators in the Louisiana State Police Criminal Investigation Division summoned Rust and Marty to question them about the Dora Lang murder investigation of 1995. And they haven't seen or spoken to each other since an altercation concerning Martin's wife, Maggie Hart, over a decade before. With many of the old files being destroyed in Hurricane Rita, the two men are asked to recount the history of their working relationship, personal lives, and the Dora Lang murder investigation, as well as a series of other related individual cases, as new evidence suggests that the perpetrator remains at large. So the story is told from, in this sort of context, of these two detectives, Rust and Marty, being interviewed and obviously cutting back to their stories that they are telling. Just as a sidebar, the British philosopher Nick Land called True Detective the most intelligent TV series in history. I don't know if that's true, but it certainly was very good and provides a nice example, as I say, a nice metaphor of the transformative process. The story focuses on the relationship of these two stereotypically masculine men to the feminine principle. Both men, Rust and Marty, each in their own way, suffer from a disconnection to the feminine. In Jungian terms, in other words, they experience a disconnect from the anima or soul. Rust is made to suffer by virtue of his ex-wife and deceased daughter, and Martin is unable to deal appropriately with the women who are there in his life. Rust, whose character is a hardcore nihilist, brilliantly acted by McConaughey, experiences himself as abandoned by the feminine after the death of his daughter and his subsequent separation from his wife. And Marty is unable to conceptualize a relation to the feminine which is beyond that of sexual objectification, a kind of pubescent relation to the feminine, in other words. The symptomatic consequence of this absent or displaced relation to soul manifests itself in both men's lives. Rust descends into cynicism to the point of nihilism, alienation, and profound sadness. He's only able to operate in the realm of reason, the masculine function, and unable to access his feeling function, which is frozen as a self-defense mechanism because of the immense pain of losing his daughter and wife, which he's been unable to assimilate or come to terms with. In Marty's case, his inability to access a more mature relation to the feminine sees him growing further and further apart from his wife and daughters, indulging in serial infidelities, in an increasing desperation to reconnect with the feminine, and he anesthetizes himself throughout the series with his chronic alcoholism. Actually, both men are alcoholics. Initially, Rust resists this, but finally gives into it as well. This situation presents us with the wound. Going back to the alchemical metaphor, with the alchemical negredo, the dark night of the soul, the stone in the shoe, so to speak, this is the constellated content that needs to be confessed, that needs to be engaged with if any healing is to be possible. This is the essential distress and archetypal situation that calls for rehabilitation through transformation and, as it always is with life's most profound challenges, in particular the experience of loss, there is no going back. There's no point of return, no matter how much we wish that there were. These situations always demand of us that we move forward, that we obey, in Jungian terms, the teleological imperative. Nothing will bring back Rust's family, and Marty, despite recognizing the destructive force he's become in his own family and his life, cannot by will alone transcend himself. What is required is a coming to consciousness and an awakening so that the scales which blind them may fall from their eyes. Like all great hero myths, they need to face the dragon, to be faced with a dilemma that takes them beyond their narcissistic, self-centered perspective into a meaningful engagement with the world. Individuation does not happen in isolation, but happens when we live in the world and when we engage with the archetypal processes that we are called to enter and grapple with. And as is the case with such things, the dilemma is directly related to the wound. Their collective wound is this displaced relation to the feminine. What our two true detectives are faced with in the story is a brutal, inhumane serial killer, a beast who preys on the helpless and the vulnerable, a man who has become so inflamed by his own masculine power that he's quite literally become a monster. He represents in manifest form, this is important, he represents in manifest form what lies latent in both of our intrepid heroes, a corruption of the masculine principle and its relation to the feminine, which starting at alienation, taken far enough, leads to madness. A condition that we are all regrettably too familiar with in the history of the world, with the litany of power-mad dictators and the savagery that has been given us by their madness. In contemporary times, this is also the underlying archetypal issue at play in the total disregard of the biosphere and the ruthless exploitation of all natural resources, not least of which are human beings themselves. In the story, this coming to consciousness, the albedo, the whitening in alchemical terms, or the very first stage of elucidation in the four-step model, is presented with Rust and Marty being assigned to investigate the murder of Dora Lang. In the narrative timeline, this is 1995. Although fortunately not always as dramatic as murder, there's something valuable to be learned here. Coming to consciousness is usually not pretty. It involves facing something quite ugly and having the courage to look it in the eye. In Jungian terms, of course, this is facing the shadow. This is what it means to become conscious, not to avert your gaze, not to regress into the uncomfortable comfort of the wound or neurosis. Consciousness imposes the demand for a change in relation, a shift in perspective, and it is the first critical step in the evolutionary process towards transformation. what our two detectives, Rust and Marty, have to face when they face it, commit themselves to the investigation of the Dora Lang murder, is their own destructive capacities and symptomatic acting out of their own displaced relation to the feminine, which each detective acts on destructively. Marty's destroying or murdering his family with his pubescent sexual attitude, and Rust is murdering the whole world with his nihilism. Two quotes capture this quite nicely, both from Rust. In the recognition of their own evil, Rust answers Marty's question. Marty asks him, "Do you wonder ever if you're a bad man?" To which Rust answers, "No, I don't wonder, Marty. The world needs bad men. We keep the other bad men from the door." Though that sounds good in the spirit of sort of machismo parli, upon reflection its obvious logical flaw becomes apparent. The only reason there are bad men at the door, of course, is because bad men exist. In other words, the only reason there is a need to protect against bad men is because there are bad men. They create their own need. A little bit like the old and bad joke about protection money. The men you are paying to protect you against themselves. They create their own need. The other quote, also from Rust, epitomizes this nihilistic attitude, this time in relation to his daughter's death, where he says, "I think about my daughter now and what she was spared, and sometimes I feel grateful. The doctor said she didn't feel a thing, went straight into a coma. Then somewhere in that blackness, she slipped off into a deeper kind. Isn't that a beautiful way to go? Aimlessly as a happy child? The trouble with dying later is that you've already grown up. The damage is already done. It's too late." The ongoing process from the four steps of transformation are the elucidation and education, or in alchemical terms, the albedo and citrinitas, take place over the following 17 years. Space and time prevent me from unpacking this in detail, the detail of the narrative in any case, and you'd probably be better off watching the series than having me repeat it to you step by painful step. That said, briefly, it is the process whereby Rust and Marty become increasingly committed to finding the monster who is responsible for the murder of Dora Lang and countless others. In this process, there is so much conflict to the point where they are completely alienated from each other for a period of a decade, I think, before finally returning in the determination to complete their mission. In the process, though, most of their bullshit is exposed for what it is, a facile, narcissistic defense, and each man pays dearly for his shortcomings or his own wound. They are educated by Freud's reality principle, and their entire relationship is an extended confession. They finally turn a corner, though, when after a false dawn is exposed, not uncommon in the transformation process, when a premature and false revolution is exposed. Many years before they catch the actual killer, they are misled into believing they have already caught the culprit, which brought great honors to the two men. But it turns out to be the wrong man, although fortunately also someone no less deserving of justice. But when they do finally reunite, each man has discovered in himself a sense of humility and purpose. Their defining purpose becomes tracking this monster, and they commit themselves to it absolutely. Their lives are now led in service of the self archetype and not dictated by their wound. And all of this is the process of education essential for transformation to occur. I'm going to resist sharing the finale with you for those who have not yet and would like to watch the series. I do recommend it. But what I will conclude with is by saying that each man finds redemption in his own way, and one which restores the relation to soul that was the initial presenting condition. Both men find redemption not by going back, or even by dealing with the issue in its presenting form, but by reimagining themselves through the redemptive process, which results in profound transformation and ultimately wholeness. With that, I'm going to leave you to get on with the application, and I certainly hope that you will engage with the application as much as time and energy allows. And beyond the work that you do on the application in applying the four steps of transformation, as I say, this is making explicit the underlying principle that informs the work, and this making of the transformative process explicit will be valuable to you. Cheers, Stephen.